Welcome back to TechNet Radio. Bob Hunt and Jose Barreto continue their Hyper-V over SMB for Windows Server 2012 series, and in today's episode, they discuss how you can configure this installation using PowerShell. Tune in as they take a deep dive into how you can leverage all the features of SMB3 as they go through this extensive step-by-step walkthrough. Bob, the mic is yours.
So welcome everybody to TechNet Radio. My name is Bob Hunt. I'm an IT Pro Evangelist for Microsoft in the Developer and Platform Evangelism Organization. You can find all more about me on my blog. My TechNet blog is www.bobhunt.net. My download links for things that you'll find in this episode and other things can be found at aka.ms/Fab4, that's FAB4, and today we're going to be talking about more about Hyper-V over SMB, but doing it via PowerShell. So what we've got here today is I've got an esteemed guest, Jose Barreto, and I will let Jose introduce himself.
Hello there. My name is Jose Barreto. I'm a program manager with the file server team, and in Windows Server 2012, I've been also working with storage scenarios, more specifically the Hyper-V over SMB scenario.
Excellent. So as I said, today we're really trying to highlight a configuration here of using Hyper-V over SMB3. And you recently did a very significant blog post on this topic on how to get to that configuration using PowerShell. So just to shout out to Jose's blog here. His blog is SMB3. Info, and I will let him talk more about that later. But what we have here today is really just a very massive and certainly very notable blog post on how to really leverage all the features of SMB3 in Hyper-V and really how to get there. So he's done a step-by-step installation configuration using PowerShell, and he's got a fairly significant and sizable test environment that you use to build this out. You want to talk a little bit about that, Jose, what the hardware looks like?
Sure. So as you can probably imagine, throughout the 3 years when we were developing Windows Server 2012, I made a point myself to have a set of machines that I could use to do some testing. So this is a set of machines that I use myself. So every time we got a new build during the development process, I would go and deploy this this new build with this configuration. And my goal with this configuration was to have something that was significant enough that I could test all my features. So I had a file server cluster, I had a Hyper-V cluster, I had some of the new networking abilities, so dual pathing, RDMA network interfaces. I also wanted to use the iSCSI target and the initiator. I had some ideas around how to do this, so I put together a set of physical machines, because Hyper-V over SMB requires that, and since I was doing RDMA, I also needed physical machines. And the idea is I have these machines. These are simply desktops. They each have 4 gigs of RAM, so it's not a big machine, but it's enough machines. I have 5 of them. One plays the role of a domain controller, so I can fully test all my environment with my own domain controller. I have 2 file servers in a cluster and 2 Hyper-V servers in a cluster. So that is enough gear to kind of put it all together and test it out.
So even though the quantity is 5, these are really just what I would call, 2012, it would be fairly standard desktop hardware, right?
There's a trick to that, right? If I get like server class hardware and very sophisticated machines, my test guys will come behind me, grab my gear, and take it to the lab, right? So I had to keep it low enough that it can do what I need to do, right? But not too high end that someone else would come over and say, hey, that's a nice machine. Can I grab it and take it to my lab to do more extensive testing? So, to let the PM in the room kind of keep the machines, I kept it at a high enough altitude, but not too high, so not to attract attention. So I got away with it.
That's a great thing. The the good and the bad side of being a program manager, a group program manager at Microsoft, right? You're top of the food chain, but at the end of the day, it's all about your team. So if the good hardware is better off served someplace else, it should go to them, right? So,
yeah. Our test teams have plenty of gear, and so they're always there. But there's always one more test case someone wants to build. So, but what I use this for is essentially to I don't use in this setup any of my corporate automation. So we have a lot of tools in our environment to kind of pre-build these things. So I made a point myself not to use any of these tools. So I walk into that room with a USB stick that has the image of the build that I want to install, and I run setup from the USB stick. So I get nothing from the outside world. So I'm trying to simulate here that you have a set of machines, and you have the ISO file that you downloaded from TechNet, for instance, and then how would you deploy it? Now, over time, I learned that the best way to do this is with PowerShell, right? So I started taking notes. And as I took the notes, I kept them, and I evolved them over time. So what this blog post is about is a little bit of sharing those notes. So essentially, when I go there and I try to reconfigure my setup, I wipe out all the machines, put a fresh build on all the machines, set just the basics, right? So I give the machines a name, and I enable them for management. Then I go back to my office, and then I can run these scripts. And that's why they're laid out as they are. So there's one script for each machine that I run, and then there's some other things to configure the environment. But the goal here is actually not to use any of our test tools, but to rather use just the out-of-the-box configuration plus these scripts that I'm sharing now.
That's great, and that's great that you bring that up, because that's very important when we're talking about this, right? Is the intended audience here is, you know, the regular IT professional that might not have that automation available to them, or, you know, super high-end hardware to get familiar with this stuff. So really what we're using here is, you know, regular class hardware and regular step-by-step instructions for anyone to use, right? So this is really an any man's environment, which is, I think, why this is so notable. While you could certainly amp this up on an enterprise scale with enterprise hardware and automation, what we have here is something that is certainly relevant to that environment, but is very much step-by-step for anyone to get familiar with these technologies. So talking about these technologies, let's talk a little bit about what we're trying to flesh out here inside of this test environment, right? There's a lot of different features, of SMB3 that you're starting to essentially enable and turn on here after you've built out the configuration. Let's talk a little bit about some of the SMB3 features that you're turning on using this list of PowerShell you have here.
Yeah, so the basic scenario here is Hyper-V over SMB. So it's virtualization using file storage. So in order to do that, I wanted to have at least one, but I put two, so I want to have a high available solution. So two Hyper-V hosts. You could have more, right? If your budget for testing machines is higher, you could maybe have 8, 16 machines. Choose the bare minimum to form a cluster and do some failover. So I have these two Hyper-V machines. These machines talk to a file server cluster. Again, I could have a single file server, but I wanted to have two to provide the ability to do failover, to test our new transparent failover capability, to test our ability to move between nodes without failure to do scale out, which is what we talked in a previous conversation, how the file server, both nodes can serve clients at the same time. And I also made a point of having at least two NICs on each machine, so I can try out the multi-channel capability, so using multiple network paths at the same time. And on top of that, I'm using RDMA interfaces. These are high-speed network interfaces. Again, this particular one is a 32 gig, so I have two ports of 32 gigabits per second on most of these machines. And again, there's faster 54 gig. I'm flying under the radar here with 32, right? But it's better than 10 gigs, so I have the capability. It's a very nice capability. My storage solution here, I was trying to grab a shared SAS, a JBOD, but those naturally go to the lab. So what I did is I got myself a nice SCSI target, which is the next best thing, and I was able to scrounge three SSDs, and I put them in a storage space. So I have three Intel SSDs, and they give me, you know, about 600 megabytes a second performance, which is, again, not too bad, but not over the top either. So that was my setup, so I'm using iSCSI storage for that. And then in order for me to play with the whole domain configuration, I can do anything I want with my domain environment, I have my own DC. So I put a domain controller. So that piece I didn't make fault tolerant, so I only have one. I'm actually trying to figure out a way to grab one more machine so I can actually have a fault tolerant domain controller, DNS, and maybe even a fault tolerant iSCSI target as well. But for now, my file server are doubled, so cluster of file servers, cluster of Hyper-V. So with that, you kind of see that I have quite a mix of technologies, so that you can play with different things. And I don't have any dependencies on the environment. The only thing I use really is DHCP from the network, but I have my own domain, have my own DNS. This is pretty much self-contained.
That's great. So in this environment, and when you guys look at the PowerShell that's here in this blog post, you see that you are enabling the features that you just talked about, right? So SMB transparent failover, SMB scale out, SMB direct, and SMB multi-channel. That's a lot of stuff, and there's a lot of PowerShell for this. Getting a little bit into what you have here, I think it's important for us to point out, as we've, started to launch Windows Server 2012, what we have here we're seeing for the first time is really PowerShell 3.0, right? So this is all PowerShell 3.0, and I think it's important for us to reference that, hey, there are some tips and tricks that come with PowerShell 3.0. There's some basic improvements inside of PowerShell 3.0 as you're starting to become familiar with it. If you're a novice or an intermediate level person with PowerShell, PowerShell version 3.0 Windows Server 2012 actually has even more enhanced in helping you along, letting you know what the available commands are by pushing that right arrow button to give you a list of possible commands and things like that. And the other tips and tricks that you want to point out here, Jose, or maybe tips and tricks that you learned in going through this environment.
Yeah, there are a few things. I think, as you see, there are a number of new areas in PowerShell for Server 2012. For instance, the entire networking piece, we used to do this all with netshell.exe, right, netsh. Now we have an entire new set of PowerShell commandlets that can do everything, from ping to nslookup to, IP config. These are the known command line tools that we use. Now there's new versions of this, right? So you have test connection for ping. You have, resolve DNS name for NS lookup. So there's a number of new things. Over here, I focus mostly on getting my multiple network adapters. So I have two 1 gig adapters and two 32 gig adapters. So I'm using some techniques to basically find my adapter based on the description of the adapter. So I use some pattern matching, and then I rename them to a name that's more convenient to me. One of my NICs is DHCP based, so all I have to do is rename. It's pre-configured, but the other ones I'm using fixed IP addresses. So there are some details there on how to set the interface from dynamically DHCP configured to static, and then how to set the IP address, how to configure the default gateway, how to do the DNS configuration. So all this is done. And because I'm doing this for me, I'm doing the steps that I need to configure my machines, I just did exactly what I needed in my environment. Obviously, if you're doing this for a different environment, you might want to use a different set of IP addresses, but the skeleton of the thing, the structure, should be pretty much the same. I also have here configuration of storage. So as I mentioned, I use three SSDs to form a storage pool using storage spaces, and then I create a space out of it. And then there are some tips here on the storage commandlet. So we're not using format.exe anymore. or any of those commandlets. Now we're using initialize disk, new partition, initialize volume, which are all commandlets that are new in this release, again, v3, right? And so we don't have to use disk part anymore. We don't have to use format anymore. It's all done with the new commandlet. So these are basic networking and storage infrastructure that you need to use. Obviously, all the roles that you need to load for the different scenarios, so loading the file server roles, the cluster role, the Hyper-V role, so that's all part of the script there.
Absolutely. And you know, the other nice thing that I love about this blog post is I run a PowerShell group in New York. One of the things that, I've got a couple of PowerShell MVPs here in New York, and they're very well known in the PowerShell community. And one of the things that I miss when you go into these heavy PowerShell conversations is the commenting, right? So, you know, it's like any good coder, right? I mean, the PowerShell, or I should say my developer peers, you know, joke that PowerShell isn't code. It's, you know, it's code light or it's scripting or whatever. I love how the fact that you've gone through here and you've really done a step-by-step overview of what each set of steps is trying to accomplish, which is very cool. So it really makes it, more chewable chunks for those of us who are not, PowerShell experts to really digest what's here.
Yeah, and the other thing that happens sometimes is that folks get, massive PowerShell scripting going on. So I got tempted to actually write a function that would essentially wrap the whole create network adapter configuration, just pass some parameters, and this have some cryptic things there that set everything. But what I did in this case was I repeated the code a few times. So I aimed more in terms of being understandable code than on being very efficient code. Because, you run these things, they take just a few seconds to run. Even if you have 1,000 machines to configure, that's not too bad. But I'm trying to make sure that anyone looking at this script could make it out, right? Just like, oh, so this sets the IP interface, so this sets the DNS, and I can see the address there, instead of actually having a whole lot of variables and functions, which make for, if you're a developer, a more interesting code, but if you're an IT administrator, it's more legible. So I'm trying to make it, easy to follow. In certain cases, I gave up on some of it because, when I'm kind of creating a whole bunch of virtual machines, then it's more efficient to kind of do it. But even when I inserted a loop or something, I tried to make it as clear as possible what's the objective there. But yeah, this blog post is like 75% PowerShell and 25% English, right? So it's really not trying to use the language properly, in this case the PowerShell language, not the English language, so trying to make it more clear. But there's a lot of English inside PowerShell too, so.
Yeah, absolutely. No, this is really great. So, you reference, you went through and you really made this an educational tool for, above and beyond just getting these features for, Hyper-V over SMB up and running and enabling all the features that we referenced early on. This is a very good, piece of work here. Now, as you got here, I'm sure it wasn't without mistakes and trials and tribulations. What gotchas did you come across as you went through building this environment and getting this going?
Well, now it's kind of okay because we're at RTM. Everything is done, right? So all the capabilities are there. I think I had some dark times along the way when we were in beta and some of the right stuff wasn't wired up properly yet. And there are a couple of cases where I could kind of get 90% there, but there was some 10% that wasn't in PowerShell yet or wasn't working in the beta. As we moved to the release candidate, things kind of cleared up. But there are some things that I remember having a hard time finding. And but the benefit of being inside the product team is I can always reach out to my PM that's doing the storage PowerShell or the PM that's doing the networking PowerShell, and I can go there and say, hey, how do you do this? How do you get this piece going? And I got some great tips for clustering. There's one in particular that crosses between cluster and storage, which is kind of nice. So somewhere here in the script, there's a place where I need to rename a cluster resource. And I need you to rename the cluster resource for a specific drive letter. So the trip that you need to make from the getting the volume, so it's like a four-part pipeline. So you first do a get volume with the drive letter. Then you pass that to get partition. Then you pass that to get disk. Then you pass that to get cluster resource, and then you rename it. So it's kind of a fun little one-liner. It's in the end, when you see it done, oh yeah, of course, you get the volume, then the partition of the volume, then the disk, then the cluster resource. But for me to find that right path, I had to talk to a couple folks to kind of, oh, so that's how it's done. So that for instance, is one example of those that was interesting to find. And it's PowerShell at its best, right? Because you're doing pipelining. There's a commandlet that's taking the output and passing over to another commandlet. But I'm doing this like four times. So creating a chain to get to the point that I need to go to. So that was a fun one.
And PowerShell starts to look like code in that scenario, right? So you're really,
yeah,
really
but
digging deep.
It makes sense. Even if you're not a developer, pipelining in this way, kind of passing the output of one commandlet to the next, is kind of natural, right? So you say get cluster, for instance, get net adapter, this, and you pipe it, you rename net adapter. So, oh yeah, so you get this, then you rename it. So there's some of it is actually very logical. It's actually more logical than creating a variable, storing the results in the variable, and then using the variable as a parameter. The pipelining actually makes the syntax more clear, more straightforward for someone that's trying to understand what's going on. So, and some of that is you need to learn it, right? So some of these things, we have some of that in SMB as well. So there's one interesting one, which is you create the share, you create the file share. The file share has some permissions, and then I just want to get those permissions in the folder. So essentially, there's a way to do a get SMB share, get the echo, and then pipe it to set echo to set the permissions of the folder behind the share. So there are a couple of these little tricks in there if you read through it. So
yeah, that's awesome. So so that's great. Good, very good advice. So just, you know, outside of the you know, you were working on this as the you know, essentially the code was being written to create Windows Server 2012. And what would you say would be the hardest part of getting all this running? Right. I mean, I know there are pieces. You know, some of these things are features, but the features are probably relatively comfortable for you since you're partially responsible for shepherding the code to get it going. So that's a piece. But there's like when I'm RDMA is jumping out at me here, right? I mean, that's not a technology that I would consider mainstream today. Was that particularly, you know, difficult, or was there another piece that you found, you know, more of a challenge to get going in this setup?
No, actually, I think in general, for instance, you take the RDMA NIC. The RDMA NIC actually feels exactly like a regular NIC. There's nothing different about configuring RDMA. It's a NIC. You rename it, you set the IP address, you do the same thing. SMB is entirely, has an entirely automatic configuration for those NICs, so it detects that they are RDMA capable. It does leverage the capability and works faster and uses less CPU. But from the configuration, if you look at the script, there are four NICs. Two of them are 1 gig traditional NICs, and two of them are RDMA NICs. You cannot tell from the script which one is which. Of course, one of them is called RDMA, so that kind of gives it away. But other than the name that I renamed it to, you know, it's a pretty straightforward process, not different from a regular NIC. That was one of our design goals, to keep that simple. I think in general, it's just the things that we are used to that may take some time. You know, for instance, we're so used of doing ping that using test connection doesn't come natural. Same thing for something like format. You want to put format there, and you have to make, oh, no, now it's called, initialize volume. So you have to just map it in your mind. From a PowerShell perspective, I think the team has done a fairly nice job of just, you know, mapping what's used most commonly and doing it. Us on the SMB side, creating a share for us is a single commandlet that has the parameters you'd expect, the name, the path, the permission. So it's a one line, fairly straightforward. And cluster has been at it for a long time. You'd be surprised, right? You think, how long do you think is the command that you create a cluster, right? People say, oh, create a cluster must be huge. No, it's actually new cluster, dash name, name of the cluster, dash node, a list of nodes. That's it. There's nothing else. It's just you pass the name of the cluster you want to create and the list of nodes that you want to make part of the cluster, and you're done. That's the only thing, right? So I think we got to a point where PowerShell now has all the abilities. I think probably the most challenging piece is when you're doing all this for an entire setup, you do have to learn from different modules of PowerShell. So we start here with loading some roles and features. Then you need to do networking, then you need to do storage, then you need to do clustering, then you need to do this. And when you put it all together, if you add up all the modules that are involved, it's a few thousand commandlets, right? So it could be challenging. So in a sense, what I try to do here is kind of guide you through the bare minimum that you would need to put this configuration together. And it touches a number of different things. It doesn't have certain areas covered, but those are areas that are not relevant to this specific scenario. But here, there's PowerShell for, you know, installing a domain controller, configuring the iSCSI initiator, creating VMs and VHDs. So it's all included in the post because that's the path that I needed to enable my scenario. So I made a point of at least clearing that path.
That's great. All right. Well, this is a lot of information to digest. So I'm going to wrap this up here today. So I wanted to thank you, Jose, for for taking the time to really just kind of flesh out what this blog post is here that that has more PowerShell in it than English. So I'll let you reference the the blog posts. So go ahead and tell us about where we can find your blog.
All right, so the blog is at smb3.info, so that's smb, the number 3.info, and there's a list there. Right now it's probably the second and third blog on the list. I have a couple of other ones that are interesting as well. So this one is for Hyper-V over SMB. I have a similar post that covers SQL Server over SMB, also with lots of PowerShell. And in general, I try to, whatever I'm playing with, whatever I'm experimenting with, I try to put it over there. And of course, as the launch happens on September 4th, we're going to have the RTM bits available. So that's all you need. Grab the ISO file, grab a few machines. They don't have to be new machines. Just grab a few of them, take them to the lab, and print out the instructions and have some fun.
That's awesome. Yep, and they can download the bits on Windows Server 2012 right off of my TechNet blog, which is bobhunt.net, bobhunt.net, or you can go to my shortcut link, aka.ms/fab4, and you're going to see a link there for downloading Windows Server 2012. So thank you guys for watching today. Thank you, Jose, for the time, and this will conclude this episode of TechNet Radio.
All right, thank you.